This particular segment has been months in the making, and I'd say really about 6 or so months ago. Tim Peel is somebody that I'd known for a while. NHL referee, has lived in St. Louis for 20 years, and we would talk a lot because his wife is from Southern Illinois. My wife is from Southern Illinois, and they grew up in towns that were just, you know, a few miles apart, so we would kind of joke about that. We didn't go to high school here, our wives would say, and they'd get that question all the time. So Tim Peel and I would talk hockey, and then he's winding down his refereeing career after 23 years, doing playoff games, going to the Olympics in Russia as an official. And then at the end, he gets caught with the hot mic, and everybody knows the story, and if not, you can Google it easily. Tim Peel, P-E-E-L, was refereeing a game. He's wearing the microphone, and it catches him, not just saying the F word, but saying basically, I wanted to give Nashville a penalty. But it goes out, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, did he really say that? That's not fair. There's cheating in the NHL. This is outrageous. And he swore with a hot mic. But it was a little raw back then. So we waited a bit, and he's now got a radio show in St. Louis on 590 The Fan called Hot Mic. There's a guy who's got a sense of humor, or was at least dealing with a rough ending as well as you can. So when we talked, it was about his career. It was about growing up first in an orphanage, and then later with his adopted parents living in a trailer park and saying, you know what, I'm determined. I'm not probably going to make it to the NHL, but maybe I could be a good referee. And he got the call in 1998 to make it to professional hockey. And again, 23 years. And the career was just about done when this silly hot mic incident happens. And then the NHL's like, we got to let you go because it sounds bad. The optics are bad. I mean, whatever. So very honest discussion about that time. The people who reached out to him. I mean, Wayne Gretzky was among the first to call him and say, you'll be fine. And he's become friends with all these Blues alums in town. But Tim's story isn't just about what happened that night with the hot mic. I mean, in the big picture, who cares? But in his real life, and I mentioned he was adopted, he reconnects with his biological mother and then finds out he's got two brothers out there. And now they're all friends and they travel together. It's a great story. So appreciate Tim joining us. If you hear a little background noise, we did it at the Wolf Coffee House on Clayton and Kerrs Mill Road, outdoor setting. You know, it was pretty nice weather. Hell, he's from Canada. It can't be that cold. So live in the elements, recording the latest Kilcoin conversation, Tim Peel, longtime NHL referee, and people in the hockey community around St. Louis and really around the NHL, they all know Peelsy. You got to have a nickname if you're in hockey, Peelsy. But just a great story about his own life and then overcoming that incident, and a very funny line from his daughter when she finds out what happened to him at the end of his career. Tim Peel, the Kilcoin Conversation, presented by our friends at Triad Bank. Jim Regnan knows Peelsy. Triad Bank is the neighborhood-friendly bank, so if it's a home loan, a car loan, whatever type of business you own, maybe you should be talking to Triad Bank because they will help you expand your business. St. Louis-based means they get it done here. There's no decisions being made in New York or L.A. They're in Clayton. No, reverse it. They're in Frontenac on Clayton. I get that wrong every time. They're on Clayton, in Frontenac. Easiest thing, just go to the web, triadbanking.com. Appliance discounters, where right now you're thinking holidays, is there a new fridge, maybe inside, maybe for the garage, maybe an extra freezer, or it's the washer dryer. No, that's not the most exciting thing, but if it's new, that's exciting. So for this Christmas season, want to upgrade your appliances, check them out, theappliancediscounters.com. Several area locations where you can stop by in person, check out the merchandise. What I always tell people, though, just search online. You can even type in General Electric and see all the great GE merchandise. Use a GE rebate. I guarantee it's going to be the lowest price for the best appliance. Their savings are your savings. Find out for yourself in person or online at theappliancediscounters.com. B&G Tuck Pointing, they are, you know it, say it with me, the best in the bricks. So if you need tuck pointing, foundation repair, waterproofing, make that home look new again with the best in the Bricks. Get a free estimate. Rich Galati, the owner there. It is family-run B&G. Those are his daughters, Bella and Gabrielle. BGTuckPointing.com on the web. See some of their work that they've done. See some examples online. Or get your free estimate at 363-0525. 314-363-0525 for all your tuck pointing needs. It is B&G Tuck Pointing. And our friends at Marie Davila Senior Living. The big Christmas tree is up. You can see it at the corner of Clayton and Wideman Road. Swing by there. Very festive always, but especially around the holidays. Since 1960, a premier place for senior living. You can have the Villa Estates lifestyle, assisted living, whatever form of care you're looking for. Take a virtual tour at mariedavila.com. Appreciate all of our great sponsors. Hopefully you'll pass it along to them that you heard me talking about them. And I should tell you, this one, because it's hockey and because there was an F word that was caught on the hot mic, some of the language is not G-rated. So if the kids are in the car, maybe this is not the one for them, just because there's a few swear words. I don't think anybody's going to get it's not going to change anyone's lives, but I just want to make sure I put that out there. Here it is, Tim Peel.
You know, I wanted to start with this, Peelzy, because I feel like as an NHL referee, you can't even, like, be you. And now you're on Twitter, hey, here I am with the kids. Hey, here I am with the family. And it's almost, I get this sense like it was pent up, like you couldn't be a human being because you're almost like a robot when you're official. You can't have a personality. You can't have a life. I mean, am I sensing that somewhat correct?
Yeah, absolutely, Martin. You know, per our collective bargaining agreement, we weren't allowed to be on social media. And you know, you've known me for 20 years since I moved to St. Louis. And my personality, that's not my personality. My personality is, you know, having fun and having a good time and friends, and not being able to be on social media. It was kind of like, what year are we living in now? Like, you know, everybody, I was the only guy that I knew that wasn't on social media. So September 1st, I was allowed to go on, and I like it. I like being able to express, you know, my feelings on, people will ask me my feelings on penalty calls, suspensions, non-suspensions, etc. And I like sharing my life with people and pictures of my family and just kind of being myself. That's who I am. I've always kind of been a social butterfly, you know, and when I was in school, you know, one of my teachers back in the day, we were in middle school, and he used to call me Hallway Joe because I was always the last person in the classroom because I was always in the hallway talking, and that's just kind of my personality, and that's what I enjoy.
Do you miss, maybe not the travel, do you miss the night in, night out, though, having another game on the docket?
No, you know what, I guess that's when I knew it was time. Even, you know, before my incident, I was retiring April 24th. Was going to be my last game in St. Louis. And the last 2 years, especially with Bronson playing a lot of hockey and Brielle in her horseback riding and Tisha, you know, the last 2 years I hated being on the road. I hated traveling. I couldn't wait till the game was over. You know, I would get revitalized when the playoffs would come around, and because the playoffs were the best time of the year. But I knew it was time to move on to the next chapter in my life and spend more time with my family, and that's what I'm really enjoying the most now, is just being at home with them every day and being able to watch them grow up. And you know this, you have a son in Carson, and Bronson's 9, and they need their dad. He needs that father figure around, and I'm just loving it.
If people didn't know that Tim Peel has a sense of humor, They will now, because your radio show is called Hot Mic.
Correct.
Okay, if I told you back in April, when the shit's hitting the fan, literally for you, the NHL and all that stuff, don't worry, Tim, by fall and winter, you'll be hosting a show called Hot Mic. Would you believe that then?
Actually, I would have. And the reason that I say that, even after my incident, probably 2 weeks into it, Tisha said to me, my wife, she says, "You're not even upset by this." And I'll tell you a little bit. When my incident went down and I flew home on Wednesday, March 24th, and when I got caught on the microphone on March 23rd, I flew home on the 24th, and I was fine that day. I was, you know, I'm name dropping here, but Gretzky's calling me, and Lou Lamoriello and Brian Burke and all these ex-players and current players, and because it was kind of a joke. Like, it was a two-second audio clip and
remind everybody, you said what when?
I said, you know, I wanted to get a bleeping penalty against Nashville, which was not my, it just came out wrong. We only called two penalties the entire game against Nashville, so obviously my intent wasn't to get one. It just, my verbiage came out wrong. I called a shitty penalty that I was embarrassed about, and it was kind of my defense mechanism to Kelly Sutherland, my fellow official, that, you know what, it was a crappy call, but I wanted to get a penalty, and it just, I don't know why I said it. I've never said it in my entire career, and
it was like an awkward moment. Yeah. You're with a colleague, and he's probably like, what was the call? Right. And you're like, oh, fuck, I don't know. Like,
and I watched the replay, and I'm like, oh, geez, that was a bad call. So when I got home, I was like, I wasn't upset because...
But you don't know it's a hot mic at the time, right?
No, the game ended, and that was in the first period. We complete the game, Nashville wins the game. And to give you a little insight, before the game, Pete Rogers, a longtime equipment manager of Nashville, I've known him for 30 years, and the equipment managers like Burt Godin, are the longtime equipment manager here in St. Louis, they really take care of the officials over the years, and so I had gone out and bought him a nice bottle of wine that afternoon, went down to the dressing room before the game. Todd Richards is there, the assistant coach. We're sitting there having a coffee, talking about our kids and hockey and horses and everything else. And so I didn't leave that dressing room going, you know what, I'm going to get Nashville. And I've only got 4 weeks left in my career, so let's blow it all up and take away everything that I did well over 23 years. So the game ends, and I find out, you know, what was said. And obviously, you know, it's crazy the world we're living in now, because it was on the Golf Channel, it was in People Magazine, it was in Fox, CNN, it was everywhere.
Was your phone, like when you got your phone after the game, it had already blown up?
Yeah, it was blowing up, and then the next day, obviously, it went to a whole nother level. But I came home, and, you know, obviously, Tisha was upset, but I was fine. You know, I'm getting calls from everybody, and Jeremy Roenick, you know, he got canceled from NBC, and, you know, regardless of what happened with Joel Quenneville, he's a great person and a great friend of mine, and they both called me up, and they said, you, this is difficult for you right now, and it goes back to your question about, you know, would I expect to be doing this now, and they said, you're going to be better, you're going to have more opportunities because of this. And Joel, I remember Joel's exact words, he goes, Peelsy, he goes, you were well known before, but he says, like it or not, you're really well known now. And so the only time I got upset and was the kids came home at 3 o'clock, and I had talked to Chaser earlier in the morning. You know, he called to see how I was doing, and then at 1:30, 2 o'clock, he called me up and he goes, I got some bad news, and he goes, Bobby Plager passed away. And you know, like you, Marty, we loved Bobby, and he was just a tremendous person, and it really shook me up because he loved my kids, they loved seeing him, and I loved Bobby. So a bit of me, when I saw my kids, I started to cry, because I saw, you know, I knew they weren't going to be able to see their dad work his final game 4 weeks later, and then I had to tell them that Bobby had passed away, and so I was very emotional. And then I'm driving Brielle about an hour later out to horseback riding, and she had a lesson, and we're driving out, and she goes, Dada, can I ask a favor? I said, yeah, baby girl, what's up? And she goes, can you tell people that you weren't fired by the NHL? And I started laughing, and I told Tisha later, and she's like, where did she even come up with that? So a couple weeks later, Tisha goes, you're not even upset by this. I go, babe, I go, you know me. I go, my life. I go, I was left in an adoption agency. I said, I grew up in a trailer park in New Brunswick. I said, my mom died of cancer at 50. I said, my whole life has been about perseverance and resiliency. And I said, I've been kicked in the nuts before during my career and been suspended once before because I did a tequila shot of the reporter in New York. And I came back and worked the Olympics and playoffs. And I said, I'm not going to let one moment define me. And my whole life, like I said, has been about perseverance and resiliency. And I just feel that everything happens for a reason. And I'm excited about the new chapter in my life.
I feel like everybody is, they just love being shocked. And, I, you know, when it came out, I was like, I bet officials, football umpires, but have said stupid shit for years. Like, hey, you watch it or I'm going to tee you up just because I feel like it. Or, you know, just because you do have the authority being the official. And I guarantee over the years, If there were a mic on everybody, somebody probably said to Earl Weaver, go fuck yourself. I mean, you know it happened all the time.
All the time. There was a ref last night, Chris Rooney, two nights ago, and it was all over social media yesterday. He told a player to go fuck himself twice. Like, what I said really in the big scheme of things, like I said to people, I go, I didn't use a racial slur. I didn't get charged with domestic abuse. I didn't get a DUI. Let's really put things in perspective here. I said the wrong thing, but the world we're living in now, and with social media, and the league was very good to me, so I would never say anything bad about the league, but it was a perfect storm. It was a perfect setup for them because they had just signed on all these gambling partners, Bally, and et cetera. You know, in Buffalo, they have kiosks there where you can bet on the games before the games and during the games. And it was a way for them to show their gambling partners, hey, our referees, that's not how they referee. They just call the game, you know, regardless.
Like there's no fix kind of thing.
Right. And, you know, yes, that, you know, that is certainly the case, is that we don't go out there to try to influence the game. But you don't last for as long as I did if you don't, at some point in time during your career, manage the game and keep everybody happy. And that's what all officials do in every sport. You just don't call the rule book. It's, everybody says call the rule book. Well, it's not black and white. There's a lot of judgment. There's when to call a penalty, when not to call a penalty. That's what makes a good official.
How much crap did you take over the year just as an official? What if we mic'd the players? I mean,
and
is the rule that you can't respond? Like if a player says you're full of bleep or whatever, I mean, what are the guidelines?
You know what? It's changed a lot because of microphones in the building. Like I can remember years ago, Adam Foote, you know, he played for Colorado. He was tough and he was a warrior and Stanley Cup champion. And we're skating up the ice and he's like, fuck you, Footer, or fuck you, Peelsy. I'm like, fuck you, Footer, the whole way up the ice. And the next shift he comes out and he taps me on the rear end. He goes, are we good? I said, yeah, we're all good. That's the way it was back then. The players swore, we swore, right or wrong. That's just the way it was. That's the way hockey was. But we had a relationship with the players that hey, they could give it to us, but we could give it to them, and we would never take it personally, and nor should they. But the society that we live in now, you know, I'll give you an example. There was a few years ago, I used an F-bomb, and it got picked up in Buffalo, and it was against a Nashville player, and the owner at the time, and he still may be the owner of Nashville, it was very religious, and he couldn't believe that we swore on the ice. He couldn't understand that. And so unless you're in the trenches and the emotions of the game, and it's just, that's the way it is. But it is changing. The players don't swear as much, the officials don't, and it's probably a good thing. You can't, because of social media, you know, Chris Rooney got caught saying it 2 days ago and all of a sudden it went viral, you know. So it's not like 10 years ago where you could say something and nobody even knew that it was said.
But you were already retiring. Let's say you weren't retiring. They probably hit you with a suspension or he's in trouble, and then you're not fired over that. It was just kind of because you were right at the end anyway.
Exactly. It was easy for them. I had 4 weeks left to go, and... But saying that, the league was good to me. They, you know, everyone said, you know, he was fired, and in essence I was, but they kept paying me. They didn't affect my pension, my severance package. The league was very good to me. And I've been told by somebody at the league that, you know, if you had 2 or 3 years left, you probably would have got a couple week game suspension, two week suspension or something like that, maybe a month, whatever it would be. But there was a lot of heat on the league and they had to protect the shield. And so I wish the outcome had been different. Of course I do, but I can accept what they did.
So did they call you on the phone? What, yes, your boss calls you?
Yes. Stephen Wacom called me at 7:30 in the morning on a Wednesday, April or March 24th. And I was at the airport in Nashville. I was flying home to St. Louis. And he called me at 7:30 and said, you've worked your last game in the National Hockey League. And I said, okay, I've got to let you go. I'm boarding a flight. And people go, that's all you said? And I said, yeah. I said, I didn't go, oh, no, don't, please don't do it. I didn't grovel my hand on my kids. I go, okay. I said, I got to let you go. I knew the decision was made. And, man, I was fine with it. And it was almost a relief because I had – you know, I had kind of, my career, I had a lot of ups and downs and good times and bad times. And I was kind of almost glad to be done and really looking forward to the next chapter in my life and really looking forward to being home with my kids and my family and just being a part of the hockey world in St. Louis. Like, you know, I was the helicopter dad that would fly in and see my son play every 2 weeks and be able to be at practice every day and be able to spend time with my kids every day, because I'd go on 14, 17 day road trips and not see my family. And you know, they were young, they needed their dad home, so it was kind of a relief too.
When you were growing up in Canada, you had to be on the ice, right? I have this image of every Canadian kid at age two on the frozen pond.
Yeah.
Did you want to play in the league?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in a trailer park. We lived by the golf course. We lived on the poor side of the golf course. And we would go over, there was a hole, it was a par five, I'll never forget it, it was hole number 13. And they had a big pond at the bottom, and we you know, it sounds so corny, but we'd grab our nets and pucks and we'd trounce through the woods and scrape off the pond, and we'd play there until it was either dark or we lost all the pucks in the snow. And so, you know, the town I grew up in, it was only a town of 1,000 people, Marty, and everybody played hockey. So in the summertime, I started caddying at the golf course when I was 13. And then when the wintertime rolled around, I missed having the spending money. So mom and dad were like, hey, why don't you ref the little kids that are 6, 8 years old? And that's how I first got into officiating, was refereeing minor hockey at the time. And then it just kind of got into my blood, and then it took off from there.
And when you got the call to the NHL to be an official, I mean, that you made it at that point. What was how emotional, how big was that moment? How vivid is it still?
It was great. It was a great call to get. It was in August of 1998, and I was living in Toronto, and the head of the NHL, Brian Lewis, at the time called me and offered me an NHL contract. And you know, everything that I had worked for, I, you know, there were many times during my minor hockey or minor league career when I was working in the American League and the IHL, there were times where I didn't know if I would make it. You know, I thought I was good enough, but I didn't know if I would make it. And so to get that call, it was like, you know, it was a great feeling. And then fast forward to 2012 or 2014 when I was chosen to work the Olympics in Russia. And I remember being over there and I'm working the bronze medal game between USA and Finland, and I'm like, I can't believe this is actually happening. You know, I'm a kid from a trailer park in Canada, and now I'm at the Olympics, and I used to watch the Olympics, you know, on TV, and now I'm a part of it. So that's probably the highlight of my career, was doing that. And it was a good feeling to know that all the hard work that I put in, it actually paid off.
You were around, I'm guessing, were some of the old barns, like the old Boston Garden. I'm trying to think of what.
No,
Montreal did the Forum.
Montreal, but I missed Boston. I got to work in the old, obviously, Joe Louis Arena, but I missed. I actually got to work a junior hockey game at the old Maple Leaf Gardens, but when I came in the league, all the new buildings were coming in at that time, which is unfortunate because, you know, I love, you know, I've been here in St. Louis for 20 years, and I love hearing the Checkerdome stories and how crazy it was, you know, down there back then, and Chicago Stadium and so on. But it's, you know, I worked in the old Igloo in Pittsburgh, of course, and but yeah, I miss a lot of those buildings.
How hard is it as an official? When the crowd's all, how hard is it? I mean, I always think you're still human. Like, you got to make a major call against the home team, and the crowd's going to let you have it. I mean, it's part of the job, right? But you know it's coming, right? As you're about to make the call, here it comes.
Yeah, there was nothing better than, you know, working a playoff game, and you make a call against. I remember once it was in Pittsburgh, and we came out of the tunnel there. It's the old Igloo. It's small, and they're waving the white towels, and I made a call against Pittsburgh, and the whole building is just chanting, "Ref, you suck." And everyone probably thinks that it upsets us, and you know, but you can't be, you have to have thick skin, and you have to, some guys are made out for it. Like, we've got 34 refs, and 20 of them make it to the playoffs every year, and 14 guys go home, and some guys that ref in the NHL never get to work a playoff game. And I was proud of the fact that I worked playoffs every year in the league except for one. I was always chosen to work. And when you know, the fans started going crazy, whether it was Madison Square Garden or Montreal or here in St. Louis, you almost relish it, and you just kind of I don't want to say you feed off it, but it's fun. It's you kind of laugh inside because it doesn't bother you, even though you think the fans probably think that it bothers you.
Why do you think, and I know for you, St. Louis, your wife is Southern Illinois, my wife is Southern Illinois, so you're obviously connected to this area, but it's such a, I mean, like Wayne Gretzky could live anywhere in the world.
It's unbelievable.
And like you walk into a Starbucks, my brother-in-law is from Calgary, and he'll call me and say, I think I just saw Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
I saw him at the Schnucks grocery store parking lot last week with a case of water. I'm like, kids, that's Wayne Gretzky. And he's getting in his car. And I'm freaking out. What is it about even like the hockey people that have lived here and stayed here?
You know, it's I saw Gretz at Napoli on Monday night. He was there with Chaser. And you're so right. You see him at the hockey rinks watching his grandkids. And he's just St. Louis. I moved here in 2001. And I didn't know a lot of people, and you know this, you know, I'm getting asked, you know, where I went to high school, and it was kind of weird, you know.
It is weird.
And it was, I didn't know at first if I really liked it here, and then Chaser took me under his wing, and he's like, come on, I'm going to take you around town. So one of the first places he took me into was Obie Clark's and introduced me to Jimmy and Joe O'Brien, and, you know, since then they've become dear friends of mine. And then he introduced me to Tony Sansone. So between Tony Sansone, Kelly Chase, and Jimmy O'Brien, all of a sudden I went with not knowing anybody to knowing everybody. And but going back to your question, it's just that, you know, you mentioned Gretz, like Keith Tkachuk is as Boston as it gets, and him and Chantel built a new house here a couple of years ago. They could live anywhere, obviously. And it's just the people here. I tell people all the time, it was the best thing I ever did was move to St. Louis. They treat me here like I'm just a ref. You know, I'm nobody, but they treat me like I'm a celebrity here. And they're just such nice people. And maybe, you know, everyone said, it's the Midwest and so on. But I'm sure there's other Midwestern towns that aren't like it is here in St. Louis. And they treat their athletes great. And that's why you see a lot of baseball players retire here. Obviously, hockey players. I think the Blues alumni has the second biggest alumni in the NHL. And it's just the people here. It's just a tremendous place to live.
I probably buried the lead. That's what we call it in journalism. But I'm pretty sure, and you mentioned being adopted. Didn't you reconnect at some point in recent years?
I did. When my adopted mom died of cancer at age 50, my dad had left her, and while she had cancer, so I, and still to this day, don't talk to him. So I went from having two parents to really having none because I hadn't talked to my dad in so long. And then my mom dies of cancer, and I had this void in my life where I really didn't have any parents, and I'm like, maybe I should search and find out who my birth parents are. So I hired this lady. I was living in Moncton, New Brunswick at the time. Hired this lady out of Toronto, and about 3 months later she calls me up and she said, I found your birth mother. She lives in Toronto and here's her number. And so she goes, this is what you say when you call up, and you know, you don't call and say, can I speak to my mom? And you call up, and it turned out it was my grandmother that answered the phone, and I said, hi, this is Tim Peel. Can I speak to Eileen Cheevers? So Eileen gets on the call, and I said, hi, my name's Tim Peel. I'm an adoptee. I'm looking for some information, and she cut me right off, and she goes, when's your birthday? And I said, April 27th, 1966, and she starts crying, and because, you know, they're not allowed to look for you because of privacy rights and so on. And so then we connected probably 6 months later. I flew to Toronto, and since then, you know, she has two sons, Don and Mike, that are my brothers that are, you know, we're extremely close. We go on family trips together. Eileen's a great lady, and she always said to me, you know, obviously she had a lot of guilt, and I remember the first few years she would say to me, you know, are you not mad at me? I said, Eileen, it was 1966. You were living in Sudbury, Ontario, nickel mine, you know, mining town. there weren't a lot of single moms in 1966, and I completely understand why you did what you did, and I had no regrets, and everything turned out for the best, and I'm very fortunate now that I've got this extended family that was never a part of me growing up.
You know what? I think there's a theme, believe it or not. I think there's a theme here where, like, forgiveness is so powerful. And like what you did with the hot mic, who gives a shit? I mean, really, that's. But like people, what I'm saying is like people can't get over stuff. Well, what you got over with your mom, that's massive. I mean, you could hold a grudge your whole life. She could even say, "Oh my God, I can't forgive myself enough to want to have a relationship." And yet now nobody wants to. Everybody's in trouble, and they got to be sent away to Siberia, and I never want to hear from you again.
Yeah.
And yet, really, the reward—if you say, "You know what? I'm over it," and forgive people, I think. I don't know if I just made that up, but I feel like there's a theme there.
No, you're
there.
Right.
I think that
you're
it's
right.
So powerful.
Like, you're right, and it kind of probably helped me deal with my incident in a few months ago, because people expected me to, like, I'm not going to lie, it was tough. That happened on a Tuesday, Wednesday morning, and Friday I had to go to the rink to coach spring hockey, and I had anxiety the entire day. I had a practice down in Chesterfield. And I had anxiety all day because I knew when I walked into the rink, you know, my picture's on the Zamboni. I know everybody there. They, you know, even if I don't know them, and not being arrogant at all, but I walk in and they're like, "Hey, there's Tim Peel, the ref, and he coaches his, you know, my kid or other kids and his son." And so I said to myself, like, "You got to suck it up here. Like, this is not going to be easy." And I walked into the rink and I saw all these coaches and parents standing around the building, standing around. And I walked right over with my head held up high. And I said, "Hey, guys, what's going on? Anything new with your lives?" And they all started laughing. But that's how I had to approach things. And Tony Sansone said to me, he goes, "Hey, we're going out to dinner. We're going to the Ritz tonight. We're going to Tony's tomorrow. We're going to Obie Clark's the next night. You need to get out. People cannot think that you feel sorry for yourself because nobody else does." And that's kind of how I have lived my life is, you know, you go back to the forgiveness and so on. Even with the NHL, people expected me to be sour to them. And I've talked to Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner, a few times since this happened. And everything I have is because of the National Hockey League. And there's a lot of guys, for whatever reason, that retire from our business. And they maybe didn't think they worked enough playoff games. They maybe feel they didn't get treated well. And they leave the business bitter. And they don't talk to guys they formerly worked with. And they just don't. They've got a contentious relationship with the league. And I swore I would never be that guy. I worked for the league for 23 years. It was the best time of my life. And I've got an example to set to Bronson and Brielle that, you know, you're going to get kicked in the balls sometimes. And I have this referee school, Martin, in St. Louis, and it was back in June, and I brought Joey Vitale in to speak to them the first day and kind of pump them up, and I knew they'd want to know about my incident, but I didn't want to lead off the camp like that. And I wanted it to be positive and upbeat. So it was about day two, day three into the camp. And somebody made a comment about, you know, my incident. And I finally said, you know, these kids are 14 to 21. I go, "Okay, do you guys want to hear the story?" And they're like, yeah. So I said,
I would have been the smartest kid who brought it
right.
up. Guaranteed.
So I said to them, I said, "Listen, you're 14 to 21. You're in high school. You probably got a girlfriend. Mom and dad bought you a car. Life's pretty good right now. But I said, you're going to get kicked in the balls throughout your life. And I said, it's how you come out on the other end. And that's really, at the end of the day, that's all that matters." And like I said, I've got an example to set for Bronson and Brielle that, hey, life sucks sometimes, but it's how you deal with it afterwards. And that's all anybody. I remember we had a party at my house a month, maybe 2-3 weeks after it happened. And I had some friends over, and one of the guys looks at me, he goes, Do you know, we're not your friend because you're a ref in the NHL. Andy Kaiser, great guy. He goes, we're your friend because of who you are. He goes, you could be a garbage man. He goes, we don't care. So we don't care what happened to you in the NHL. And I was like, you know what? I really believe if you're a good person, you treat people well. People don't even ask me about it anymore because it's such old news. And like I said, you know, earlier, let's put things in perspective. it's a 2-second audio clip that it's the world we live in, and that's just the way it is now.
Well, I can't wait. First of all, I've learned I better hang out with Tony Sansone. I'm going to eat a lot better if I'm hanging out with Tony Sansone. Let's get the roast put together because we will have a hot mic.
Yes.
It'll be fun.
We'll
great.
Have a hot mic. It'll be a lot of fun, Martin. And I appreciate you've always been good to me over the years, even when I moved here, bringing me into the studio for interviews. And you've become a good friend, and I appreciate everything.
I really appreciate the honesty that Tim had, not only about his situation, making the most of it. And it is really perspective, especially when you find out right after that, he gets the news that Bobby Plager had died and he was close to Bobby and his kids loved Bobby. It really does. Just, it puts it in perspective, and he's doing just fine post NHL. And even though they had to let him go, it sounds like the league handled it as best as they could and took care of him with his benefits, retirement, all of that. But really the honesty about his life and reconnecting with a biological mother and having the guts to reach out and then having the forgiveness to make that relationship work. I'm very impressed by that. Appreciate Peelsy, Tim Peel, being on the program. The Kilcoin Conversation on Spotify, iTunes, all the segments posted at scoopswithdannymac.com. We have regular visits. You can check out all of the past ones on the website, scoopswithdannymac.com. Our sponsors are Triad Bank. Let's see if I can get it right. They're on Clayton Road in Frontenac. They're on the web, triadbanking.com. B&G Tuckpointing, the best in the bricks. Make that home look new again. It's unbelievable. I lived in the city for a long time, and every home was brick. And when they came out, did their magic, it really made the home look incredibly different, especially if you're about to sell or thinking about it. It's a tremendous curb appeal upgrade. B&G Tuckpointing, 363-0525. Marie Davila Senior Living, corner of Clayton and Wideman Road. Just great people. Fred, Mary Kay, his wife, always, they're always in good spirits. And when you're living there in your retirement years, it's sort of nice to have that upbeat environment. Everybody seems to be in, I don't know, just walking around there on the campus. Everybody's just in great spirits. Red Shandings lived there for so many years. Red's another example, somebody who was always upbeat, always had a story for you. Marie Davila Senior Living. Check them out online at mariedavila.com. And Appliance Discounters, theappliancediscounters.com. Find your merchandise online and then go get it. And don't be waiting months for an appliance, because they've got the giant warehouse, 80,000 square foot. It means they have the inventory. It's really one of the benefits of having that huge warehouse is inventory. TheAppliancediscounters.com, or stop by in person. Find out what's so true. Their savings are your savings. I'm Martin Kilcoin. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you again soon.